On another exciting edition of Animation Deliberation, we are continuing our coverage of Young Justice Season 4, Phantoms, Episode 10, Nomad Esser. It's kind of tough to say that one backwards, but bear with me here. I'm not Zatanna. And we're going to get right into that after some ads we have no control over. So watch out for Clarion, the Witch Boy. If you go somewhere, we will enter into a realm of chaos, and you do not want that. So we will be right back. Sing along if you know the words. A 1, 2, 3, it's time for Animation Deliberation. A conversation and a celebration of our favorite action animated series. Yeah. Okay, welcome back to Animation Deliberation, the podcast that takes action animation and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. I'm your host, J. Scotty St. Clair, and I am joined by the illustrious Zuhair Ali. What is happening? How are you?
Ooh, illustrious. I feel so flattered. I'm doing good. Just another day in paradise, enjoying the also lovely winter seasons.
Hope everyone out there is staying whelmed and warm this holiday season. I will say, you know, given the nature of this show, it does a great job tackling some of the, you know, heavier stuff as far as like mental health and stuff like that. And I know the holidays can be a particularly tough time for people. So hopefully this show can offer you a little inspiration, a little levity, and hopefully some laughs along the way. And hopefully Young Justice does the same for you.
I have a happy mix of everything.
Yeah. All right. So we are here to discuss some Young Justice. But before we get right into that, we have another 5-star review we want to bring up. So Mr. Zuhair, what do you got for us?
All right. From TR Money. I love to cartoon. 5-star review says, love animation, love comics, love fun jokes, and Stranded Panda. More great potting from the network.
All right.
Hey. Thanks for all the love.
Yeah. Short but sweet. I mean, what more can you ask for?
Yeah.
We appreciate the feedback there. And then I guess on the other side of things, you and I kind of discussed off air, just discussing some of like the topical animation news in the world. So we did get some news on a show that we've discussed a lot. We've kind of discussed our plans to discuss it anyway. But that is Cowboy Bebop, particularly the live action version. Zuhair, you brought this news to my attention, so why don't you let the people know what's going on as far as that goes?
Yeah, so we talked about doing some feedback for the animated Cowboy Bebop series in anticipation of the Netflix live action series, which, due to one of the hosts always being slow on watching stuff we haven't done yet, I'm sure you can guess which one that is. But it turns out that season one actually, because of its mixed and negative reviews, led to the cancellation of the show. Even though they apparently left a big cliffhanger, it just wasn't getting the love that it needed, and Netflix decided to cut the cord early.
Yeah, yeah, it's a shame. Netflix has a history of not really giving shows a chance, and it's not entirely on you. I will say, for my purposes, I only watched the first 3 episodes, and while there were some good things, there were definitely some issues as well. So I guess we'll just be hopeful for the next one. If there is a next anime live action adaptation, it's kind of tough to tell what's going on. Actually, you know what? There is a My Hero Academia live action movie in the works, isn't there? I think, yes. Supposedly here in the States.
Stop it already.
Okay. Doesn't like it at all. Full stop.
Oh, wait. That movie came out. It's called Sky High. It was on Disney Channel.
Good call. Oh, man. That's funny. Now, even though you just like, I could sense the full-on disgust when I brought that up, I can't help but kind of like want to cast a live-action All Might. And the main person that's coming to mind right now is Patrick Warburton, who I'm sure you know as Kronk.
Oh my god.
Anyway.
I am here to pull the lever.
Very good. Very good. Okay. All right. So I know you and Andrew covered the previous 2 episodes, and it's kind of one of those things where, you know, it's awesome to be covering it as the show is coming out and whatnot, but that was kind of the benefit of covering the previous seasons after they'd been out for a while. you were able to kind of break things up into arcs. And in retrospect, I feel like episode 8 kind of functioned as a bookend to the previous episodes there. And then episode 9 and 10 really functioned together as kind of this setup of this new chaos lord and the conflict there.
So. I mean, it sounds like the people at DC have been enjoying my arc system, because this whole season has actually been set up in arcs. Yeah, so the first first arc being McGann's story, and then we had Artemis' story, and now we have Zatanna's story, and it's like, you're welcome, DC.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll keep ideas coming.
For sure.
And they have the cool posters for each one too, which I really enjoy looking at.
Oh, they are so good. Yeah, I love those posters that come up on the background on HBO Max. Yeah, they're so detailed and so vibrant. They're just incredible. Good call. And I know you're on cloud nine with Zatanna being such a focal point right now.
Ooh, my heart. They did her dirty this episode too.
You think?
Yeah, because this whole arc, because first they randomly stuck her up with Clarion, and then they mm-hmm. just threw her in the middle of the battle. It's like, hey, you're probably gonna die in a second, but just look at this fight just to make my point.
Yeah,
fair. Don't torture her like that. Yeah. Poor girl was so concerned. Like, why is Clarion here? Why did he not kill us? Who are you? Why did I teleport over here? Where did Edragon come from? Yeah. Okay, now I'm just drowning. It's like, oh, you poor girl.
Yeah, when you put it like that, she did get put through the ringer there, didn't she?
It's like, man, I just started this day being a teacher. How did I end up like this?
That is fair. That is fair. They went a long way from those little Throg thing, Throg Womps, whatever they were called.
I would have protected her.
Yeah, I'm sure you would have. But all that being said, so I feel like it's, again, one of those situations where we basically have three stories going on. So we have mm-hmm. the flashback sequences kind of explaining more of Vandal Savage's influence on the world at large, and kind of he and Clarion's history specifically, and how that ties into Atlantis. And then there's the ongoing fight with Clarion and the new Chaos Lord Child, and then how that's requires, you know, Zatanna's students to recruit Jason Blood and Etrigan with the help of Phantom Stranger. And then the other one, which doesn't get as much screen time, is we continue to see the journey home for McGann and Imri and their Uncle John. So is there a particular one of those you want to tackle first? We've kind of already started to talk about Zatanna and everything going on there.
Sure. It's kind of I was most fascinated with the Atlantis stuff, but we can finish up with that. Let's just kind of knock out McGann, just because it was kind of quick and short.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Emery's interesting, because mm-hmm. you don't know, even McGann even points out that she's selfish. So there is kind of her wanting some attention, but there is a lot of her caring as well. So it's hard to balance her intent of which one matters more to her.
Hmm.
And it makes you wonder if there is any ulterior motive, if it really is about her and some objective that she has, or if it really is caring about McGann. I don't know. I just have my guard up with her.
Yeah, I totally get that. I wasn't sensing it as much in this episode. I mean, initially, especially when they get into that blow up argument, when she's, goes from seemingly being very caring to making it about her. And, you never even gave me a chance to be a good sister because you're the worst excuse for a sister. And it was kind of, it offered some nice levity when McGann called her out. She's like, hey, I am a licensed counselor. I know exactly what you're doing. You're trying to bring me to a place of catharsis. And he's like, well, is it working? Kind of. Yes.
Just the way they were screaming in their minds was hilarious.
Yeah. 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 But then it was heartbreaking, because she says immediately, then this is the first time I've seen you laugh since he was taken from me. And yeah, she just breaks down again. And it's tough to watch. I mean, she's in such a vulnerable place, and she's closed herself off. And, Imri mentions as much. It's been 2 months, and she's completely closed her mind off to both John and her. And it's not healthy. It's not natural. So at this point in time, I do think her allegiances are altruistic and good, but the show has a history of endearing you to characters that tend to stab you in the back. I'm thinking last season, Dr. Jace, who I can't remember if I think it might have been the previous episode. We got a little bit of a name drop there where they kind of talked about how the lights operations in Markovia were still going well, and that
was the last episode.
Okay, I thought so. I had a feeling, but
yeah, because anyway. it was in the middle of the meeting that Clarion dipped out, and that's when they like had mentioned that.
Correct. Okay. Good call.
Yeah, but in regards to what you were saying about that moment, like first off, it was interesting that John was just kind of like chilling. Like it's like he was observing, but he also just didn't want to be a part of it either. Like there was a mixed thing of just kind of like, oh, I'm in the middle of this, but you know, after the emotional breakdown and everything, you see that he's just kind of there to observe and see how they take care of it on his own without him interfering in this and that. And yeah. You mentioned like it was a big deal for her to break out crying, but break out laughing, but it was just as important for her to break out crying as well.
Oh, of course.
Because, you know, you're not supposed to really pent up emotions like that. Otherwise it comes out at the most inopportune time. And the fact that she had that moment just to cry in front of her family, was something that she definitely needed, but also the conversation that Jean had with Emery regarding that she's built her own family.
Yeah, that's great.
With her team. And the fact that she said Richard instead of Dick kind of had me thinking. I was like, who the heck is Richard?
That's a good, I did too, actually.
So it was the importance of like Emery hasn't been there for her. She hasn't guided her through anything or, you know, been through any of her trauma. And sure. Even Jean has been with the Justice League. So there is this gap in which these two have to earn that title of being her family because they haven't been there for her as much as Artemis and the rest of them have.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. They do need to earn that place. And I think, you know, McGann can relate to Emery on that level because that's kind of her own relationship with her own younger brother, which we kind of saw explored throughout season three in the beginning part of this season. Mm-hmm. So she's willing to give her that chance, but she's obviously in just such a tough spot right now. And I do love the fact that you bring up John's insights there because it kind of reminds me, as well as insightful and thoughtful as he can be, I do appreciate those moments where it shows how kind of clueless he can be as well. Because when Emery's first trying to make the joke, like, are we there yet? And he's just like, no, you know that we have this, like, this amount of time to go, like a full week to go. She's like, it's obviously a joke from like Earth references. And the fact that she, you know, she's taken on that appearance and is trying to incorporate and learn about Earth for her sister, it means something to me. And I did appreciate the fact that when she wanted to trigger her, the first thing she started doing was insulting Earth. She's like, oh, the boring third rock. Why did I ever choose to come here?
The third rock was pretty funny.
Yep. The only other thing I would kind of tie in that doesn't fully relate to this arc, but I guess it kind of functions as a small fourth arc, is that we got those little snippets with Beast Boy where he doesn't even speak.
Yeah.
But you see him. Well, I guess in the previous episode, that's when Blue Demon kind of confronted him. But in this episode, you see that he's got the sleeping medicine and that all he's doing is looking at that photo of a younger version of himself with McGann and Connor. And tough stuff to witness. I hope he gets the help that he needs. I know he was instructed to seek therapy, so hopefully he follows up on that.
Yeah, it's cool. You can see what season is being referred to just based on McGann's hairstyles.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Very true. She has definitely undergone quite the transformation character-wise and visually. So
she looks quite lovely.
She does. All right. So I think it's everything for that particular plot line. So you mentioned that you were excited for the Atlantis stuff. So no reason to wait around for it. Let's get into that. Any particular favorite parts of that or any big surprises for you?
I was just intrigued with the lore overall.
Okay.
The fact that there's two super crucial people to Earth's history that just happen to be related to Vandal Savage.
Mm-hmm.
one being his son Nomu and then his grandson, the founder of Atlantis. Like the fact right. that two of his children have had gifts from the order of from the Lords of Order, excuse me.
Correct.
Yeah. Was just like fascinating. The fact that he's causing so much chaos, like that they have to put it in his bloodline to be like, yo, stop this early.
Yeah.
And them going into the history of like, yes, it started off as magic and they were given more magic to control the balance, but in turn that made the metahumans. And then there was early ways of triggering that, but then they started putting the magic with the technology, which is how Atlantis got to the point that it is, because we've seen them like go through sorcery school and how advanced everything is over there. And they've had the technology for centuries. So it's like seeing the birth of that was just something that I didn't expect them to like really dive into. Mm-hmm. But it was something I never thought that I needed until they actually put it into that much detail. And it wasn't even a whole episode's worth of stuff. Like they got that whole story just with mixing things together. And obviously we're going to get more of it. There is going to be, you know, more elaboration on how this affects this world and this and that, but just the way that they put all that information together and how well done the storytelling was and tying in all the stuff that we already knew about Atlantis and about these heroes and about the lore and the universe that they built was just kind of like, it's just always hats off to the show doing such a good job at that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we knew how long lived Vandal Savage was, but that's the thing that like, and you hit it on the nail on the head, just talking about the fact that not one, but two Lords of Order were his progeny. But it's just the other part that sticks out to me is like, they mention all the like subspecies. So we've got, you know, normal humans, Homo sapiens, and then you've got Homo meta, and then Homo magi, and then from the Homo magi, eventually you get Homo mermanus. So it's just, yeah, I had no idea to expect the fact that he was ultimately responsible for Atlantis and so many of the heroes, you know, down the line. It's pretty crazy just to know how much of an impact he has on this entire universe.
And you've seen, first off, I'm glad that you remembered all the Latin words because I totally forgot them. But it's, we've seen like how he feels about his descendants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he trains them, he adores them, he wants them to be powerful. But when it comes time to off them, like he cares for them, but it'll just be like, all right, time for you to go. Your job, like your reason for living is done for me. We've seen him kill his daughter. And then when it got to the point where it's like, it was time for his grandson to go, he was like, Clarion, love you. Bye. Boom. Drowned the whole continent.
Yeah. The part of that like sticks out to me is, so when he was gone for 200 years, he didn't even know that his grandson would be there when he got back. So he was kind of delighted to find that he had another immortal like him, the first of his line to be long lived mm-hmm. like himself. And then, where his grandson, you know, looked upon Atlantis and felt fulfilled and you know, that was enough for him. They mentioned the fact that Vandal Savage saw something more. His hunger for more started to grow, and it just seemed kind of fitting that, well, he was willing to sacrifice the city of Atlantis by being in bed with Clarion. Once Atlantis was sunk, that wasn't enough. The Lords of Chaos needed more. That wasn't enough to sate their appetite. So whereas he was hungry, you know, and killed his own grandson to achieve what he saw as a better end game, he did not suspect Clarion's hunger to be as great as it was. And it even says like he was saddened by the great loss of life. So
Do you get what their bond is exactly?
They see, I just get the impression, and the only way it's been laid out as far as the show goes that I can really extrapolate is that they see each other as tools to be used. Okay. And Clarion calls them partners, whereas Vandal refers to him as a weapon that can be aimed, which just the word choice there kind of reminds me of another character that we'll talk about later, but they use very specific language there. So I think that the Lords of Chaos are kind of right in kind of calling Clarion out for being more of a lapdog. But
Yeah, I mean, I guess that kind of transitions it perfectly about the child and how she was accusing Clarion of just being a tool of Vandal Savage.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, you're just his pet. Like, you're not actually doing what you're supposed to. And the Lords of Chaos have deemed that you've just been wasting time with your tenure on Earth here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Clarion made a reference to an event that I knew for sure. He talked about when he turned everybody into kids. I remember that like all the way back in season one, I want to say. And then he talked about like a Rutabaga monster. And then he talked about the Earth 17 fiasco, but I didn't know what that one was. So does that ring a bell for you? Do we know what that is?
Actually, Andrew asked me about it right before this too. And I was like, I didn't even know that. So his question exactly was, I wanted to ask you about Clarion's line about the Earth 17 fiasco. I don't remember any multiverse stuff that we saw. And I'm pretty sure Young Justice is on Earth 16. So it was going to pick your brain if I misremembered. Or if it was just a subtle nod to the multi-Earth stuff DC does. But we know nothing about this show is just a nod. So, yeah. I didn't even know that it was on Earth 16. So I didn't really think too much into it.
Okay. Well, it might be something from the comics. So like we always say, if you're a listener out there that has more comics knowledge than we do and you know what they're referencing there, please let us know. AnimationDeliberationPodcast@gmail.com is the best place to send that. Outside of that, just in terms of like the battle that took place, it's always a pleasure to have like Clarion in the fold just because you get to see just like a different visual like representation of magic and energy on display over there with the chaos magic and whatnot. And he's able to, you know, do some more high flying stuff like that. And it afforded Zatanna the opportunity to show off her shields and whatnot as well. We haven't, you know, highlighted the voice actors as much as we kind of did when we first started the show, just because we kind of gotten in the groove and a lot of those voice actors have stayed the same and the performances have been very consistent. But I did want to highlight the voice actors for the child, or child rather, and then Mary, one of Zatanna's students, is Erica Ishii. And it's kind of funny. I remember seeing Erica on YouTube. She showed up on the Screen Junkies channel, which is now the Fandom YouTube channel. She would like show up as a correspondent on a lot of their shows and she would participate on some of the things like movie fights and stuff like that. So it's just really cool to see her have achieved that level of success. And she's doing a great job. I didn't even recognize her, but as soon as I saw her name in the credits, I was like, holy crap, that is so cool. So,
for her. That's awesome.
Did you have some things you wanted to mention as far as like the skirmish that's going down between Clarion and Child, be it, you know, the action that took place or maybe some of the dialogue that they exchanged?
Just in regards to the voice actor real quick, like, you know how when you go through Netflix and there's like a new show, like the trailer will just start playing right away? There was an anime that popped up and it was the dude who does Clarion's voice just narrating at the beginning. Nice. And I was like, ooh, this is making me cringe already. Yeah. I mean, obviously in a good way, but like that voice alone just like caught my attention to like, what is this?
Tom Adcox. Yeah. He's been voicing him since season one. So yeah, he is always one of my favorites. So I'm glad he was so recognizable.
His voice definitely stood out when that narration started.
Awesome.
But yeah, within that skirmish, it's, I'm going to point out that I love Flaw's face. And that was just like a stick figure emotions. Like, it just looks so adorable. it is amazing that like the magic doesn't affect him. Like, he's not easily penetrable. Right. And also the fact that they're so fed up with Clarion that Child actually has a power boost from all the Lords of Chaos, not just hers.
Yeah. He goes into the fight, you know, his normal confident self. He's like, I don't need your help. I got this under control. Yeah. Whatever shakeups are happening out there, it always comes out the same. She's like, oh no, you're confused. I'm not here to replace you. I'm here to destroy your corporeal form so you never exist on the mortal plane again. It's just like, yeah, no fair. And then I loved how every time he meant to say oh crap, he just says oh carp.
Which was quite a bit too. Yeah,
for sure. And then we have kind of alluded to the fact that Zatanna was kind of a bystander to the fight, just kind of a little bewildered, like, what's going on here? And the only reason she was there is because this character, the Phantom Stranger, tells her that her perspective is needs to be expanded. She needs to have a bigger idea of what's going on, because as much as like Clarion has been a longtime foe for her, she needs to understand that what they just experienced was a summoning of chaos, and that there are bigger and badder things on the way. And the Phantom Stranger is one of those characters that I have often heard referenced, and I've seen in the background and stuff like that. But this is actually the first time I've seen him take like an active role in the proceedings there. And I'm excited to learn more about him. He seems kind of like Dr. Fate, in the fact that he doesn't really have a vested interest in good or evil per se, more so just the balance of things continuing the way that they should. At least that's what I'm getting at this point in time.
On our last episode, Andrew said that he seems like the Watcher.
Okay, yeah, that's a fair one too. I think all of those kind of exist in a similar...
Yeah, it's like he's intervening just because he has to.
Okay, yeah. I like that comparison. Outside of him kind of wisping Zatanna away to the battlefield, the other main thing that he does is collect her students to recruit another character that I would kind of put in the same space as the Phantom Stranger. I've often heard Etrigan, the demon, referenced, and I've seen him, pop up in the background, especially in the comics. I've seen him in the background a few times, but he never had more than a line or two. But it was really great to just get some of his backstory and see Jason Blood, and learn that Jason Blood was cursed, or that I don't know if it was Jason Blood that was cursed or Etrigan that was cursed, but one of them were cursed and they are now bound to each other. So interesting stuff there.
Yeah, it was Etrigan that was cursed by Merlin.
Okay.
And then tied to Jason.
And didn't he say like Merlin was his half brother? Okay, so these are things that I had no idea about. So that's pretty cool.
So I was actually proud because I knew who he was just from the DC animated universe. Okay. Because Justice League Dark, which is my favorite, had Etrigan in it.
Perfect. Okay.
Because Constantine was just being a douche and was like, oh, hey, I need your power for something, and just like manipulated his ability and drew Etrigan out.
Okay.
And what's interesting is that he kind of did it in this episode, but Etrigan in that movie, everything he says is in rhymes.
I did pick up on that. That was great. Yeah.
Yeah. So he did it a little bit here and there, but it's like there was no point of dialogue that wasn't a rhyme in that movie.
That's awesome.
So when he came up with the turtleneck and the blazer and that little like patch of gray hair, like, you know, the little skunk look, as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, I know exactly who that is now.
Cool. That's super cool.
Yeah. So when he came up and he went like full demon mode, I was like, yes, that was so satisfying. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember one of the rhymes. I know when he first like did his fire breath on Child, it was something to the effect of like, flames always do the trick, burns them down to candle wick.
Yeah. I really like that stuff. And then she came like out of the mouth of the skull and just
that was so like, cool. Ooh. Yeah. When she's just like, she starts off tiny and just grows out of his eye socket. Yeah. It was really kind of disturbing, but really cool.
Because when Clarion slashed her in half and you could see like her brain a little bit, I thought it was going to be something like really grotesque, where it's like the muscles start to form back around the skeleton. Yeah. But the way she just presented herself, I was like, that's much cooler.
Well, that's a great call, because in the previous episode, we saw when she like turned that guard inside out just to like understand how he worked. That was pretty gruesome. But I'm really glad that you bring up the right before he cuts her in half, because we got that scream, which is a great shout out to Erica Ishii again. It like sent chills down my spine the first time I heard it, but I love the fact that it was just a trick, and like even Clarion fell for it, and he's like, didn't fool me for a second, did it, Teekle? It's like, wow, who asked you? It's like, obviously you just did.
And she was even like, how did my human scream sound? Was it convincing?
Yeah, she was proud of herself. She's like, I wanted to put a little what those humans call oomph behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great dialogue.
The other thing I wanted to mention about Etrigan's and Jason Blood's introduction is, and I got a shout out Captain Game Show, John Irons, friend of the show here. He messaged me right after he watched the episode. So there's that sequence where Jason Blood, when he's in his Sanctum Sanctorum, and again, I was surprised to hear another Sanctum Sanctorum outside of Doctor Strange's. I don't know which one exists first, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was DC. Anyway, there's that sequence where Mary is touching one artifact after another, and he's like, don't touch that. Don't touch that. That's different, but still very powerful. It's like, you know what? Just don't touch anything. And John Irons messaged me. He's like, please tell me you recognize those artifacts. And I had to be honest with him. You know, on first watch, I did not recognize them, but I will definitely keep an eye out on second watch. And upon second watch, they stuck out to me more, and I had an inclination, but I didn't feel confident enough about it. So I did do the necessary research, but it is a great reference. Do you have any idea?
No, because as you know, I try to like watch it for the first time as close to recording. And as soon as it came up, I was like, I feel like I'm supposed to know what that is. I'm not going to rewind because that's not what I do. But yeah, I'm glad that you did the research. So after that huge trailer, what was it?
So it's not a spoiler. It's not a spoiler for Young Justice, but it is just a great reference to another action animated series. And that is Gargoyles, another Greg Weisman production. And the artifacts are the three keys of power from that show. So they're the Phoenix Gate, the Grimorum Arcanorum, and the Eye of Odin. So really, really great reference.
That's really
there.
Cool.
Yeah, it was perfect. And Etrigan actually looks quite a bit like some of the gargoyles on that show. So it was just, perfect.
I can see that. Apparently Mary has something inside of her.
Yes.
That Etrigan pointed out.
Yes. And I don't know if that's just referencing the powers of Shazam, where she's, I don't know. Well, actually she said that she used to be a superhero and she gave it up. So.
Yeah. But she got really defensive about it. She was like, I don't have anything. What are you talking about?
Well, she just said she's not anything like Blood or Etrigan. So,
you know, I don't know. Just her level of
she was definitely triggered. She was definitely triggered. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, that's a character, you know, I've seen the film Shazam, and I know Mary showed up in that one. She was the oldest of like the adopted family there. And I believe this is the same character, because even in like the last episode, she couldn't say Shazam, but I believe it was 13 that whispered Shazam excitedly. So
yeah. I love how impressionable 13 is.
Oh yeah, she's great.
Like she says, hello, Megan. And that's so crash. Like it just seems like she really like blends into her environment around her. And you can tell like who she looks up to and this and that. It's just so adorable. Yeah.
And I kind of felt like I had a hello, Megan moment myself, just given the fact that her name is 13. And then I think it was the last episode. They kind of, when Zatanna was kind of giving them notes, she was like, you know, I can't remember exactly what her notes were, but she referenced the fact that her powers are based on unlucky magic. And I was like, 13, that makes total sense. Like, I felt kind of dumb for not picking up on that.
No, me and Andrew kind of said the same thing because like the last time that we saw 13, we didn't exactly know what her power was.
Yeah, they didn't do a great job.
And then it took a while to remember that her name was 13. So when they actually like took the time to explain that, it's like, thank you.
Yeah, DC. Last season there wasn't much there outside of her being Jaime's girlfriend and being a Beast Boy fangirl. So, good stuff. Yeah, her name's Tracy Thurston, I want to say. Is 13's actual name? I think so.
Take your word for it.
And then the episode ends with... Oh, actually, I'm trying to remember how it gets there. So basically...
I mean, we talked about the other two students. I guess the main thing to point out for Khalid was it was really cool that he has healing powers. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of seemed to be like his go-to thing in this episode. Like from being strangled, he healed the throat. And then after Zatanna got knocked out from drowning, she kind of like resuscitated her via that power. So his ability to manipulate works on a medical level, which is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and it's nice to see him leaning into the instruction that she provided. It's like when you change something, you know, change it back. And he forgot to do it to that little frog creature. But
and the tree.
Yeah. So, I'm glad you brought him up as well, because we didn't want to leave him out of the proceedings. It's nice to see another character of like color and culture that's not like, as much as I loved... why am I forgetting her name now? Halo. What was Halo's first name? Violet. pilot.
Gabrielle.
As much as I love her, it did feel like a little bit of her being, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I might be just like speaking from a wrong place, but some of it felt like a little on the nose, and it's kind of like we have to, you know, include a character like this. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like this one's a little more natural. Like he's just there, yeah, and he's part of the proceedings. We don't need to like hang a light on it as much.
Yeah. She definitely is the only one that felt a little forced. Obviously I enjoyed it because I'm,
oh, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed it as well.
Character,
I enjoyed
it as well. At the same time, she was kind of like forfeiting Islam at the mm-hmm. same time, which is fine, to each yeah. their own. But there was a lot of things where it's kind of like when she mentioned it, there was nothing to lead into it. Like she just would randomly bring up the religion and randomly bring up the hijab, yeah. and like the first credits was her talking about like embracing the religion. So it's like, you know, it's cool that they mentioned it and this and that, but of all the inclusion, I think I agree with you. That was the only one that seemed forced. Okay. Just me being me, I enjoyed it for what it was.
No, I enjoyed it well, and I think
I do see that.
No, I think you worded it much better than I could have. So I appreciate you taking my intention and making it a little more refined there. So
yeah, and then I had to mention Khaled because I just his name is cool, and they actually put emphasis on pronouncing it right. Yes, so they did. Now I can just say Khaled. It's not Khalid.
Yeah. But anyway,
Khaled.
We speaking of him having to heal Zatanna in terms of her, you know, almost drowning and whatnot. We end the episode with our heroes essentially being defeated, Etrigan included, and even Clarion really being defeated and having to, you know, turn tail. But that illustrates the point that Phantom Stranger was trying to make, that chaos and order are necessary, and that leads directly into Vandal Savage having his discussion with Nobu. And again, it just kind of reminds you, in case you forgot, hey, this Dr. Fate that we've been seeing battle Clarion throughout the show these last three or four seasons, he's actually connected to Vandal Savage. So yeah, it's just kind of interesting to see where that's going to go. He kind of leaves off on a cliffhanger there. He's like, if, you know, with your aging host body there, who's going to stop this new threat that's more powerful than Clarion? Mm-hmm. As much as you don't like Clarion, as much as you don't like me, you're gonna discover that you know, this elemental war is gonna require more of everyone. So
you mentioned Clarion having to bug out, reminded me that she actually like what'd she call it, a rock tsunami? She just opened up the earth and just went, oh, carp, and then just ate. I was like, yes. I mean, that's what led to the flood that, you know, knocked out Zatanna. But I think Zatanna needs to have some words with Nobu because he's there holding on to, I think it's Zatara's body.
Yeah.
But her dad's body because of Clarion's presence. And he was like, if there's a Lord of Chaos, there needs to be a Lord of Order. I'm holding on to this body. And he was like so persistent on like holding on to whoever he ended up with. And what is he doing right now? Because this whole conundrum is going on and he's just chilling in the Tower of Fate. Yeah. And the last couple of huge magical issues that's come up, like, that's why you're here. That's why you were so persistent on holding on to this dude's body. That's why you're depriving this girl of her father that she loves so much. Yeah, like, do your fucking job. Yeah.
Nobu's, I'm going to have to censor this out, but it's totally worth it. Nobu's a bit of an
Sorry, I had to.
And I you mentioned all that. Correct me if I'm wrong here. I think the last two times like we've seen the Ankh of Fate come up, it's being summoned by Zatanna, not even Dr. Fate. So mm-hmm. you're totally right there.
Yeah. Zatanna's had to deal with Clarion the past couple of times. What's Nobu
Good
doing?
Good question.
Yeah, I want an answer for that. I really want her to confront him and be like, if you're not going to do your job, let my dad go, because clearly I'm the one that's holding the mm-hmm, reins.
Mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see if this particular storyline carries through to just like the next episode and they do like a little 3-episode arc, or if it's another 4-episode arc. I'm not as much as the, don't get me wrong, I love Zatanna, but I'm not the like, obviously it's not something I'm as known for as much as you, but it has been really nice to get to spend just more time with her, even though she was a little shortchanged this episode, as you mentioned, but you know, they've done such a great job of planting all the seeds with Dr. Fate, Clarion, and Vandal Savage especially, that I think this episode was definitely a high mark for the season. These last two episodes in conjunction, I think, were definitely a high mark for the season for me.
I mean, what's the calendar looking like for the rest of the year? If they do stick with with four episodes per arc, this episode came on the 9th. That would put the third episode on the 16th, and the fourth on the 23rd, and the 30th is when they're taking their break.
Okay.
So they could finish up Zatanna, start the fourth arc, and then leave a cliffhanger until the springtime.
Yeah, that's probably the route they'll go. Yeah. All right.
Unless my timing is wrong and the end of the Zatanna arc is what's the cliffhanger. Who knows? Or they give my girl a 5-episode arc. I'm down with that too.
I'm down for that too, yeah. Bring it on. Bring it on.
I really do like Dr. Fate. I think he's a cool character and there's a lot of backstory to him over here. So yeah. As much as I do want a lot of Zatanna, I do want to see how they touch that magical realm and what this Lord of Order is supposed to be doing.
Yeah, Dr. Fate is super cool. One of my first exposures to him outside of this show were the Injustice games, and they just do a really great job of selling you on some of the intrigue there. But outside of the animated world, I do have to mention we've got the Black Adam starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson live action movie coming out, and we do have Pierce Brosnan cast as a live action Dr. Fate, so that'll be very cool to see. Yeah.
Much excited. And isn't it supposed to be like an HBO Max Zatanna show?
Correct. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Nervous about that one, but excited to see Fate.
DC seems to be on the upswing as far as their content goes. I mean, we also got that Peacemaker trailer. I don't know how you felt about Suicide Squad.
I haven't seen it yet, actually. Okay. But yeah, I was a little busy last week. Didn't get around to watching it.
Hey, it's a busy time of year for us all. So, you know.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Just got to stay whelmed.
If you know,
stay
you whelmed. Know.
All right. Anything else you want to say about this particular episode or just Young Justice in general?
No, just a super well-balanced episode. We got to progress the story, ask more questions. They gave us stuff we didn't know that we needed, and fantastic development as always.
Very good. Very good. All right, well, we've come to that point in the show where we like to let the people know what we have going on. So for myself, I will make mention that I was able to appear on the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast for their late night coverage of Hawkeye Episode 4 on Disney Plus. I was joined by Melissa Khalil and Matthew Fox. So that was a fun time, and it was just kind of heartwarming to be trusted by the main host of that show to step up and make something happen for him there. So I encourage you to check that out, as well as all the awesome stuff we're doing here at Animation Deliberation. I did do some coverage for Hulu's Hitmonkey with Blake Geilenfeld, and that was a great time. So check all that out. Zuhair, what do you got going on?
First off, I did not know that you got to take the reins on that. That is amazing. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
It's an awesome opportunity. Excited to go listen to that. For me, myself, just going to be honest, life's been a little up and down lately, so I've been behind on the content. I obviously do want to get back into the anime stuff, you know, finish our Demon Slayer rewatch, because the recap season is ending and the official new part of the new season is about to begin. So do want to talk to y'all about it. I do want to watch about it. Just trying to get all my ducks in a row. So just keep an ear out for the anime stuff.
Having your ducks in a row is very important. So,
Affleck.
All right. For me, I will say thanks for tuning in and continue to do so. That's TOON.
Stay whelmed.
Boom. What's up, Animation Deliberation listeners? I'd call you Animaniacs, but I think we might have some copyright issues there. But anyway, Jay Scotty here with a little addendum to this particular episode. We did get some feedback from one of our stalwart listeners, Mr. TJ Stafford, and I totally flubbed at the beginning of the episode. I had the audio queued up and everything, and then just totally forgot to mention it. So wanted to include it at the end of this episode. And thank you, TJ, for always listening and providing your feedback. I think you got some great thoughts here that will serve as a good kind of close to the episode and get people thinking about where the season has already gone and where it will continue to go. So thanks as always, and keep tuning in.
Hey guys, I want to try one of these voice memos to talk about the latest episode. First of all, I want to check on Zoo and make sure he's okay, because we had a whole episode leading to a whole arc all surrounding Zatanna, and I wanted to make sure his heart didn't just explode or something like that. This was a fun episode, even though it was a lot of exposition. I really enjoyed the narration done by, I believe it's the Phantom Stranger? He reminded me a lot of Uatu from What If, so that was pretty cool. We also learned a lot about Vandal Savage in this episode. Apparently, his genetics working its way through humanity over thousands of years is what led to the modern metagene. And he started the community that would become Atlantis before it went underwater. We also learned that he's known Clarion for a lot longer than we thought. And it seems like their relationship might be a bit more complex than has been shown up to this point. So I'm curious to see if that's going to get dove into at all in the next few episodes. Zatanna has really embraced her role as a teacher of magic because she's got three new students. Well, the first one is Tracy, codenamed 13, who we met last season. And I kind of suspected her powers were luck-based just because of her name. And as it turns out, that is true. That was confirmed in this episode. We also get to meet Mary Marvel, who says that she was on the team for a while, but kind of implies it didn't go very well. So I'm curious to see if we can learn a little bit more about her tenure on the team and why things ended up the way they did. And then the final student is a young man named Khalid. I hope I said that right. And I really didn't know anything about him. So I broke down and did a quick Goog, and come to find out, at one time, he is Dr. Fate. So I'm wondering if throughout this arc, we're going to see him end up taking the Helmet of Fate from Zatara and becoming the new Dr. Fate. And considering how young he is, he could be Fate for quite a long time, and that'd be very interesting to see. There were a lot of references to Season 1 made in this episode that I really liked. The first one was Madame Xanadu talking about back before she knew she had powers and she was essentially a fake, and interacting with Kent Nelson is what led her to discover her powers, and we saw that episode in early Season 1. And then the other reference I noticed was Roanoke Island. Apparently, I think they said this is a place where chaos magic is strong or something like that, but they were there in Season 1 also, and that's where all the evil sorcerers gathered to split reality between the adults and the children. So that's a nice callback. And speaking of Roanoke, I just want to say this new villain child and her new automaton called Flaw are both very creepy. That smiley face on Flaw is going to have to go real soon because it's giving me the creeps. Anyway, that's about all I had for this episode. I'm very curious to hear your guys' thoughts.
Thank you for listening to the Animation Deliberation Podcast, a proud member of the Stranded Panda Network. If you would like to contact us, you can email animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @animationdelib1. For this and other great shows, you can visit strandedpanda.com or join the great community that is the Stranded Panda Chat Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/SPChat. Tune in next time, and remember, stay whelmed.